US 99-0933, Donald Irvin versus David Grasser. And we have representing Donald Irvin and Susan Irvin, David Wilk. Mr. Wilk.
May it please the court. The respondents in this case are seeking to have the court engage in judicial legislation to rewrite the recreational immunity legislation. They ask the court to hold that walking in and of itself is a recreational activity without anything else. Further, they seek to have the court legislate that the use of an easement, regardless of the activity engaged in upon the easement, gives rise to liability, or excuse me, to immunity. In the instant case, the plaintiff, Donald Irvin, was walking across an easement upon David Grasser's property to reach another property, the property of Paul Grasser, who is not a defendant in this case. As with all easements, an easement is granted for a specific type of use. In David Grasser's case, this easement was granted for people to gain access through his property to the landlocked property, to come and go. That's all that this easement permits. That is consistent with easements granting access to landlocked property all over the state of Wisconsin. They're all access easements. The purpose of these easements is to permit the movement of location from one to another, not for recreational use. The defendants in this case are seeking to extend recreational use beyond access to movement from walking from one place to another. In other words, if a person is using an easement of access and they're walking from one place to another, that, proposes the respondents, is going to become a recreational activity subject to immunity for the owner of the property.
Counsel, it makes no difference whether they were going to recreate or not. In other words, I was just thinking up in a great deal of Wisconsin, you have easements to hunters to go hunting, and you're advocating if there is an easement over one's land and that land is used for whatever purpose, that that does not equate anything to immunity under 895, right? In other words, it has to be, they have to be using the easement for recreation at the time of the incident?
Yes.
Does that make a lot of sense?
It does, and I will hopefully explain to you why I believe it makes sense. First of all, easement holders for property that doesn't adjoin property that's going to be used recreationally should have the same rights as any other easement holders. We believe that easement holders are easement holders are easement holders. It has nothing to do with whether or not the person eventually intends to recreate versus engage in a non-immune activity. Secondly, it's important to keep in mind the legislative purpose here. The legislative purpose is to encourage people to open up their property to permit recreational use on it. Granting immunity to easement holders does nothing to further that legislative purpose. And the reason for that is because the easement holder has no ability to exclude people from crossing their property. Whether they have immunity or don't have immunity, they have to allow people to access the property consistent with the use of the easement. If Mr. Grasser, in this case, has no immunity, he still cannot limit the access of Donald Irvin to Paul Grasser's property because of the easement. I hope that answers your question.
I didn't quite follow the last, because he can limit that. Just go over that again.
Sure. An easement, as the court is aware, is the right of one person for the use of the property of another. In the instant case, the legislative purpose was, and is, to encourage people to open up their property. There was a perception that people were closing off their property to recreational users for fear of liability. In the instant case, that is not in this case because of the existence of the easement. The servient property, David Grasser's property, he has no ability to exclude Donald Urban from crossing his property as long as crossing that property is consistent with the use of the easement. In other words, he is a guest of Paul Grasser. Therefore, whether he has immunity or not, he can't limit access. Therefore, granting him immunity or not has absolutely no effect on advancing the legislative purpose. It's important to keep in mind that the legislation here is relatively specific. The legislation in this case holds that no owner is liable for any injury to a person engaging in a recreational activity on the owner's property. That's the legislative terms that are chosen. The legislature, in their wisdom, can choose to write the legislation as they see fit. We may disagree with policies. We may agree with policies. That isn't the role, respectfully, of the court. That's the role of the legislation. In this case, we're asking the court to give this statute its plain, clear, and unambiguous meaning. The plain, clear, and unambiguous meaning of this statute is, if you are engaging in recreational activity on a person's property, that person will have immunity. If you are merely transiting to and from that property, across someone else's property, there is no immunity because you aren't engaging in a recreational activity upon their property. To hold otherwise is to open up a world of difficult possibilities. It's the quintessential slippery slope. You can imagine a situation where a person is traveling to go see fireworks, and they have to park five blocks away in order to get to those fireworks. Let's assume that the watching of fireworks is an immune activity. Are we going to extend this immunity, this traveling to an immune event becomes an immune event, to every person upon whose property he crosses over those five blocks?
Well, is he trespassing?
There is no allegation that he was trespassing.
No, I mean your example of going to watch the fireworks. If I were going to watch the fireworks, I would walk on the sidewalk or in the street, and then over the other city-owned or state-owned public park facilities. Or if it were privately owned, I'd get onto private property. So where would I be walking to go to the fireworks that would open up recreational immunity?
For instance, if you were parking at a location that allowed public parking, if you were crossing the parking lot of a gas station. I apologize for showing my bias. I'm a little more familiar with Milwaukee than Madison, but there are open areas in Milwaukee that corporations encourage people to use as squares and parks, those kinds of properties. I would find it absurd if the court would hold that as you were crossing one of these squares to go see fireworks, if a window, because of negligence, fell out of one of these buildings and struck you, that you would have no recourse against that company because you were on your way to a recreational event, that they would then be able to claim recreational immunity for your crossing their property.
Counsel, let's say I was going to the fireworks and they were at park in a small, you know, rural area. So you leave your house and you cross the street and you go through the neighbor's, couple of neighbors' backyards, and you then get to the other side of the block, cross the street, walk past the gas station area, kind of take a, and then finally get to the park. So you go through really kind of the back way.
Are you suggesting that crossing the Smith's backyard and then getting on to the Kelly's backyard and then going to the street, that to define walking on the Smith's backyard and the Kelly's backyard, that this would be, that your opposing counsel is trying to suggest that that would be immune with recreational immunity?
That is what I am saying that the respondents are attempting to do. Now, the other issue is, would the Smiths, who you've described, would they have liability? That is a different issue. There could be an argument there that the person is crossing as a trespasser, in which case there is no duty owed to them. And the example that I was giving was specifically referring to a situation where the person walking is not a trespasser. And in the instant case, the only activity, it's undisputed that the only activity that occurs on David Grasser's property is that Donald Urban crosses it. He doesn't have a picnic there. He doesn't throw a ball there. He engages in no other activity other than crossing.
Now, but walking can be a recreational activity. I'm going to the park. I'm going for a walk. The purpose of my walk is recreational in my mind. How do you draw the line then? In other words, the purpose of my walk is to recreate. And so you're not saying walking is never recreational.
Absolutely not.
You're saying in these facts that he was on the property not for purposes of recreating, but to get to the other side.
In this case, his walk was not the recreational activity. It was merely his mode of transportation. Clearly, if you go for a walk in a park, and the cases have held this, for instance, if a person goes for a walk for relaxation or for exercise, that can be held to be a recreational activity, as opposed to a person walking down to the corner drugstore to pick up their prescription. We would tend to say that's probably not a recreational activity. That's one of the difficulties with this statute is that it gives us an enumerated list. And it says, here's this enumerated list of things that are recreational activities. And then it says, we also want you to think of everything else that is similar to this. We want you to put them next to each other and compare them. And if something that isn't on the list is substantially similar to the items on the list, then we'll hold it to be recreational activity. But in the instant case, if you say that merely crossing one person's property pursuant to an easement, regardless of what your eventual goal is upon that other property, becomes a recreational activity, there's no stopping point. What if they parked five houses away and crossed, in effect, the easements that are the city sidewalks? Is each person along that way, five houses back, going to have immunity merely because your eventual location may be an immune event? That seems to be opening up a Pandora's box, because it would extend back to the moment you leave your home and walk to your car, to get in your car, to drive to it's the chain of imaginable horrors.
Don't you, and I guess this is my question, is that the ultimate purpose here of Mr. Grasser, what was the ultimate purpose? To get to his boat?
Mr. Urban,
to get to his boat?
That is an issue in contention, and it's a little bit more complicated of a question than you know. And the reason for that is that this was all part of a general commercial transaction. It all happens over basically the course of 24 hours. Mr. Urban arrives to purchase this boat. He's instructed to cross the easement. He's instructed that that's the proper way for him to arrive. He walks down to the boat. He and his family spend time on the boat. They spend the evening on the boat. And in the course of that 24 hours, they make a number of trips up and back across the easement, carrying tarps off the boat, carrying equipment down, cleaning supplies, things like that, as well as the day of this incident, going down to the boat to back the boat in and out and practice doing that. So although he is walking down to Paul Grasser's property, the only activity that takes place on David Grasser's property is that transiting.
Yeah. Well, that's what my first question that I asked you was, when you have to translate this to many other possible easements, but I was thinking of people crossing someone else's land to go hunting or fishing, and you're saying we shouldn't look at the ultimate purpose for which they're going to be there.
Otherwise, you're going to be treating easement holders differently. A person, let's imagine that Donald Urban is crossing this property for a commercial purpose or for a non-immune event. He's merely walking across this easement. In that situation, if the determining factor becomes what is the eventual activity that's going to be engaged in, you treat David Grasser differently when he's walking across the easement to a recreational event as to when he's walking across that easement in the exact same manner to a non-recreational event.
That's what 895 is all about, isn't it?
It isn't because of the existence of the easement, and that's a crucial difference here. First of all, Mr. Grasser is not permitting the use of his property for recreational activity. He has no right to exclude David Grasser, period. He isn't saying, come use my property. I'm opening up my property to you, and therefore I would like you to recreate on it. What he is saying is, I can't do anything about it. This gentleman has an easement. The easement does not depend on whether or not the activity that is going to be engaged in is recreational or not. That is why the legislative purpose is not advanced here. And in fact, if you think about it, the legislative purpose is to ensure that properties are kept open for access. In the instant case, the easement guarantees that the legislative purpose is going to be followed. There is no scenario, as long as Mr. Urban is using this easement consistent with the contractual obligations of the easement, there is no...
I think I want to differ with you on that.
Okay.
I have a piece of recreational property, or I had a piece of recreational property in Portage County. And I needed an easement on a side potato road to get into it. Now, if the owner of the land of the road thought that he would be liable for anybody else who used that easement, who used that road, he would write into that easement the fact that I could not. He'd greatly limit my use. So it seems to me that the purpose of the statute is fulfilled by not limiting the use, by not forcing landowners who are going to grant easements to have to write in their restrictions.
Well, I think that there are two assumptions in your position that I need to address. The first is that what you're stating, it assumes that a person who looks at this legislation, an easement holder, or excuse me, the owner of a Serbian property upon whose land an easement lies, that person is going to look at this legislation and say, aha, I have immunity.
His lawyer will.
Well,
in my instance, the lawyer did.
Well, if you look at the language of this policy, it's not in there. It would require a rewriting of the statute in order to allow...
No, the point that I'm making is that if we rule in your favor, every lawyer that has ever consulted to draw up an easement is going to limit the use of that easement solely to the person who's giving the easement to, because he would enjoy no recreational immunity.
Well, the other assumption that I think you're making is that immunity is the inducement for people entering into easements. I think that the more accurate inducement is consideration. I don't think that the people who are entering into easements right now are looking at the easements that they're entering into and saying, I'm only doing this because I have immunity. I think there's no expectation of immunity. I think that they're entering into these easements because of consideration, because they either want to purchase the property or they are getting a better deal on it because it's subject to an easement. And because of that, I think that it may be fallacious to say that the immunity or lack thereof is going to affect easement holders' granting of easements.
David Grasser had property. He gave an easement to his father. Why?
Actually, Paul Grasser owned the entire property. Paul Grasser, in effect, subdivided the property and sold it to David Grasser. In that contract, as a condition and for consideration, there is an easement in perpetuity for Paul Grasser and guests of Paul Grasser. The reason for that is, if you look at the diagram that's been supplied to you, the lower half of the property contains buildings and docks. Part of the agreement in the easement and with Mr. Urban was that upon the purchase of the boat, he would have access both to the boat and to the docks thereon. So the reason for Mr. Grasser Sr. selling the property to Mr. Grasser Jr., conditional upon this easement, is so that Paul Grasser Sr. would always have access to that land, to that waterfront, and to that property. There is some indication in the record that sometimes past, Paul Grasser had operated a fishing charter service out of the lower portion of the property. And that also may have been one of the goals in granting the easement. Mr. Grasser was never, has yet to be deposed because of the speed with which the motion for summary judgment was filed and heard.
Mr. Welk, in the respondent's brief, there is a discussion of the Linville case and also the Sauer case. Both of those cases seem to involve people going on property in preparation to go fishing. In one instance, I think the fishing was going to be the next day. And I find it hard to distinguish those cases from your situation. Can you distinguish them?
I think that there's one very important distinguishing fact that is also in every reported case in Wisconsin. And that is that in the Linville and Sauer cases, the people were engaged in recreational activity upon that person's land. None of them had left the property. They were still within what I would call the four corners of the property. Never has Wisconsin court, in a reported case, extended that immunity beyond the property line. In other words, we're protecting the people for activities upon the land of the owner. If they're engaged in recreational activity on the owner's property, we will immunize that owner. But never has the court said, and if you're on property A, engaging in recreational activity, we are going to permit owner B to enjoy immunity because of something you're doing on someone else's property. That has never happened. That's contrary to the language of the statute. It's contrary to the language of the reported cases, all of which hold that what you look at is the activity on the owner's property. So the question here becomes, what activity is on David Grasser's property? Doesn't matter what happens on Paul Grasser's property. The only analysis becomes regarding David Grasser's immunity is the activity on David Grasser's property recreational? And the court has to find that it isn't, because
what is it if it's not recreational?
It's merely it's transiting. When a person walks into this room, they are walking and yet they aren't acting recreational. All they're doing is using the easement for access. They're using the easement in the manner in which the easement is designed to be used.
Well, doesn't the easement here lead directly to the pier where the boat is anchored?
No, it leads to the property upon which the pier is connected. And we can imagine scenarios in which the activity that occurs on Paul Grasser's property is non-immune activity, whether it be commercial, whether it be because he is an invited social guest, whether it be because he's there to purchase a boat. Activities that are non-immune activities.
So I'm just thinking, if he had a baseball glove and a baseball, he's throwing it up in the air as he's walking down to the boat dock, would that change things?
Yes. Okay. I believe that if he engages in recreational activity, if he engages in recreational activity,
so
upon the easement,
a tennis racket, a fishing pole, I don't know, he's whittling, What if he's skipping and whistling? Is that recreational?
I think skipping and whistling is probably substantially similar enough.
What if he's driving a truck across the property? It's 10 feet wide or something. Driving a truck and is on that property. Is that engaging in a recreational activity?
I think driving a truck in and of itself is not a recreational activity.
What if he's on a four-wheeler going from across the property to get to the dock? Is that engaging in recreational activity?
I don't think so. I think that, again, he is merely accessing the property. He's using the easement consistent with the...
I'm sorry. Please finish your answer.
Consistent with the easement. If he does engage in recreational activity upon the property of David Grasser then has immunity. Because then he is engaged in recreational activity upon the owner's property.
Okay, counsel, maybe the easement here is throwing us off. At least maybe it's throwing me off. So let's, for purposes of a hypothetical, forget that there is an easement. I've got a 40, okay? And then, and Justice Wilcox has got a 40 next to mine. And Justice Wilcox has this beautiful trout stream going through his property. But the only way to access it is through my property. So a person walks, and I don't close it off to anybody. So a person walking from my over my property gets injured. Do I enjoy recreational immunity?
I see that my time is up. May I be permitted
yes.
to continue? In the situation that you've described, unless that person is engaged in a recreational activity upon your property, then no, you don't enjoy immunity. Just like if that person is crossing your property for any reason.
Okay, but then doesn't that run directly contrary to the intent of the statute? Because if in fact I do not enjoy recreational immunity, I'm going to shut off my piece of property so nobody can go and catch those 23-inch trout that are on Justice Wilcox's property.
And the point that you've raised is the point that I have, I think, inartfully been trying to make, and that is the existence of the easement precludes you from doing that. You are not allowed to shut off that easement. That's why there is no access issue here. The person who wants to get to your property, they can get to it if there's an easement upon your property, regardless of whether or not you have immunity, and regardless of whether or not you want them to be doing that. That's the nature of an easement. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Simpson?
Good afternoon. Arthur Simpson appearing on behalf of Mr. Grasser and Heritage Mutual Insurance Company, the defendant respondents in this particular matter. The trial court properly determined that the recreational activity statute bars this particular claim. In my presentation on issue today, I first want to discuss why that is as a matter of statutory interpretation and public policy. Secondly, I want to address the two specific theories that I believe that exist that supply the logic behind applying the statute in the fashion in which the trial court did when it dismissed this case. Finally, I want to address some of the miscellaneous laments that the plaintiff has as to why the recreational activity statute would not be applicable here, the commercial transaction argument, the recreational activity argument, the social guest argument. The statute, the first place to start interpreting this statute is with any statute, is the language of the statute itself. Look at the definition of recreational activity. Look at the definition of owner. David Grasser qualifies as an owner under the statute, and this is recreational activity. Now, I want to go through some of the two theories that we have with respect to recreational activity in a couple of minutes. But the plain meaning of the statute does not have any limitations or limiting language, as Mr. Urban's counsel has argued here, with respect to how the statute should be applied. If this court believes statutory construction is necessary, as it would if we get beyond the plain meaning of the statute, then we go into construing the statute. And we start with a basic tenet that's set forth in the legislative history, Section 1, 1983, Wisconsin Act 418.
Counsel, before you get the legislative history, what about the words of sub 2, who enters the property to engage in a recreational activity? And you've drawn our attention to the definition of recreational activity, sub G, the definition of owner, D. What about...
There are two theories. That brings me right to my theories that I was going to raise, and I'll cut to that. There are two theories that need to be articulated as to how this statute should apply. Number one, I refer to as the continuation theory, and that is that recreational activity was ongoing at the boat launch, obviously, and one needs to get to and from the boat launch, and the recreational activity continues as walking to and from the boat launch. Now, that issue is the one that Mr. Rook advocates rather aggressively against here. The court has found that in the Sauer case and in the Linville case, walking to a fishing spot constitutes recreational activity. That was not on separate pieces of property, as you will, if we can divide these properties as totally distinct, as Mr. Wilk is intending to do. But that is one basis for determining recreational activity that is strictly on a continuation basis. I think this case quite distinguishable from the Sievert case, which is the other one that is referred to in our brief. In that case, we had somebody walking to the neighbor's property to say hello. They happened to be out on a boat ramp or a dock, I believe, and they were just going out there to say hello. That's not recreational activity. There was no activity. It's a short walk. There's nothing recreational about it. At the end of it, they weren't going boating or swimming. Now, had they been going boating or swimming, then we have a situation like our case. That is the continuation theory. The second theory is the easement theory. And under the easement...
I want to stay with this continuation theory,
okay,
if it doesn't impede your progress too much.
Sure.
And that is, I want to take Justice Babbage's hypothetical, that we have two separate pieces of property, indeed two separate owners. Now, you're going to Justice Wilcox's property for that trout farm, for that trout stream.
Farm.
The trout farm. He raises trout.
Pond. I know what you mean.
I'm closing my property.
You're going, and I'm going to leave easement out of it for right now. You're going across Justice Babbage's property to get to Justice Wilcox's property. You're really not doing anything on Justice Babbage's property. It is necessary to cross it to get to where you want to go. You injure yourself. You're walking across the property. You injure yourself on Justice Babbage's property. Does he enjoy immunity?
Well, let's assume we get by the trespasser issue, which would be my first motion for summary judgment on behalf of Justice Babbage.
Yeah, let's assume
once
that.
Once we get past that point, yes. The bottom line with this statute is to be liberally construed in favor of the property owners. It's to be construed in favor of encouraging use of the trout fishing area.
Okay, now.
And if I could finish and then maybe follow up. The bottom line is there isn't going to be any fishing if Justice Babbage is concerned about a lawsuit that he's facing, and we are deterring the purpose of that statute unless we make it applicable to him. The statute is to be liberally read in his favor, and we are not to deter him thinking, God, I might be sued if somebody goes across to get over there and do some trout fishing. I'm not going to allow that.
Okay, now I want to get back to my truck then.
Okay.
And we're taking my truck across his property, and there's a... something that causes an accident with the truck.
Okay. You run into a tree.
One of the turkeys in Justice Wilcox's property comes and flies right into... No. Anyway. So is my driving my truck across this property to get to that trout stream recreational activity?
Well, what's your plan at the end of the day? Are you just driving across?
Or no, I want to go fishing.
You want to go fishing?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Okay. So when I have my vehicle and I'm driving it across this property and I'm injured,
There's recreational immunity for just established when I'm driving across that property with my car.
Absolutely. What's the difference if you're walking or in a truck? Why should that make any difference? The bottom line is we have a policy that the legislature has set forth with this statute to encourage people to open their property so that it can be used for trout fishing.
Okay, I'm a 12-year-old kid. And, you know, kids, especially in smaller towns, the backyards are just a path and an avenue to get someplace else. I mean, that's the way you are. You know, sometimes you'd use the sidewalk, lots of times you wouldn't. And in fact, oftentimes in these smaller towns, there's a path in these backyards. You know, you can even see where the kids constantly go to cut across here and cut across there. So as a 12-year-old kid, and I'm cutting across the backyards, trying to end up at the school playground so we can play volleyball or something. All of those people, all those backyards, you know, the neighborhoods and everyone always uses, it's not a matter of trespass because you're always using them. All of those backyards, those people enjoy recreational immunity?
Sure. Why should people open up their property, let everyone do what they want on the property, and then be subject to suit?
What?
That's what this statute talks about. Why? I mean, you're obviously making a more extreme example.
Sure, I am. But my example is to try to emphasize and see if it works. I wouldn't think of that as recreational property as I go through the backyards or engaging in recreational activity on property held out for recreational activity, but I'm cutting through these backyards just to get to the playground. But if I get injured on any of these backyards for a variety of reasons, those people are immune from suit.
Sure. Let me put it this way. That is the most extreme example. If you want to draw a distinguishing point in this, let's take a look at our situation as compared to that. That's a situation where there are a lot of different routes that could be taken, a lot of different possibilities. In my particular case, and I think in the trout farm example, are probably better examples. Because there, you have one way and one way only of getting to recreate. And that is by going across this property. And if you don't allow that person that has control of that property the right, the immunity, then you are controverting the legislative intent here and you're controverting the language of the statute.
But then, aren't you giving license to all of these neighbors to have anything they want out there, any kind of danger, anything that could be injurious to 12-year-old kids? Who cares? Because if the kids are walking on the property and sometime going to end up either at the playground or at the swimming pool, there's never going to be any liability for being on the neighbor's backyard.
Well, and again, assuming there's no trespasser issue, which is a major impediment to your question, but assuming they've all given permission with respect to that, the recreational activity...
And it's de facto permission, because
well,
that was there.
Well, I'm not sure that's a concept that I would accept as a viable one. But at any rate, because I don't think a landowner has a legal duty to forbid people on their property. They have to have a privilege in order to get there, whether it be expressed or implied. But that's another day and another issue. The question that you pose with respect to recreational activities, that's true of the entire statute. I mean, in every situation where you're going to apply it, you can stand there and say, well, doesn't this statute just encourage the landowner to do this, that, or the other thing, negligent or careless? That doesn't, to me, draw a line that's a clear line. It doesn't have anything to do with to whom the statute extends. Obviously, that is a downside to any type of immunity statute. The argument that's always made is when you have an immunity, then you're going to deter people from maintaining the property or doing this, that, and other to keep it safe. That's always an argument that can be made. I don't think that addresses the issue of how far we want to extend this. What I'm saying, and I want to get to the easement theory, because I think that is important as well as the continuation theory. Each of these applies here. The easement theory, I don't think there's any question on this record, although Mr. Wilk has raised some doubt about it in his presentation. There was a protected recreational activity on Paul Grosser's property. That is the gentleman that owned the boat launch area, the father here. Paul Grasser's property, as a practical matter, joins David Grasser's property in the area of the easement. In other words, David owns property, Paul has an easement through the property. The two properties are one and the same at that point in time. My position is that where there are two owners and recreational activity as to one, all owners are protected. If you don't do that, then the bottom line is you're not going to meet the legislative purpose, which is encouraging recreational use with respect to the statute. I take some issue. One of their arguments seems to be this easement is king. And that is, if you have the easement, he has no rights at all. Apparently David Grasser now has no rights at all. He can't preclude anyone from being on his property, and therefore, what's the difference if he has immunity or not? I have two responses to that, one of which Justice Babich somewhat stole from me, took my thunder, if it will, during his earlier comments. I think that, first of all, I don't have the burden of proving that what the legislature did is going to have a direct impact on every easement that's prescribed in this particular state of Wisconsin. If we did that and put that responsibility on anyone seeking interpretation of a statute, that's an impossible burden for us to meet. The legislature has simply determined what the policy is and what the statutory language will be. Every lawyer in the state, obviously, will have their eye on this particular case. If there are easements granted in the future, this is certainly going to color how those easements are whether they're granted and under what terms they're granted. David Grasser, if nothing else, has learned one thing from this particular case. That is, don't let anybody on your property, if not nice guys, finish last from what has happened to him. Now he finds himself here in the state Supreme Court today. A gentleman who simply did not object to his property being used. Somebody runs off of a retaining wall that his neighbor had to the north. He's accused of being negligent for tying his dog to a chain and letting it outside.
Maybe
negligent.
No, Baby is the name of the dog.
Baby is the name of the dog. Thank you.
You like that.
That's right. At any rate, the bottom line is that I think it's going to have, realistically, it is going to have an impact because lawyers watch this, real estate brokers watch it, people that are engaged in this type of a practice of granting these easements, there is going to be some awareness and this is going to have some impact. I think it's naive to say it won't have any impact. Now, I'm not prepared to stand up here and say it's going to be the most devastating thing in the history of the common law and it's going to end all easements. But that's not my responsibility. What I am telling you is that there is an impact here. And the second issue that I take some disagreement with Mr. Wilkes' comments is he says David Grasser has no rights to keep people off his property because of that easement, and so what? Let's just stick him and strip him of the recreational immunity that he's entitled to. My belief is that he can say, Mr. Urban, get off my property. Now, if his father wants to sue him for not allowing the easement, for not following the terms of the easement, fine, so be it. Now, for Mr. Grasser, that might be a good alternative in this particular situation. If the courts are going to say you have no recreational immunity, a landowner such as David Grasser might well be advised to fight it out with the easement holder as opposed to letting people cut across his property. So there is a real impact here.
Mr. Sampson, David Grasser, I'm looking at the definition of owner. Okay. Person that owns, leases, or occupies property. Does he come under owns?
I'm sorry, the definition, is he an owner? Is that your question?
Yes. And I know you do cover this in the brief, but which of the three does David Grasser.
Two out of three. He owns and he occupies. I think the Bethke case, which was recently decided by the Court of Appeals, is quite clear on the occupies issue. And unquestionably, he would fit within occupying under that case. And certainly under just a basic reading of the statute, this is his property.
Subject to the easement, is that it?
Yeah. He owns the property. He he owns the entire...
He owns the subject to the easement.
Correct.
He occupies the subject to the lease.
Correct.
And he is not leasing it to anyone.
Correct. He was the owner. He was living there at the time. He actually has sold it subsequent to this accident, but at the time, that's exactly what the situation was. So I believe he fits under either owner or, if not owner, certainly occupies, particularly given the definition in the Bethke case. And again, consistent with the liberal reading of the statute that's involved here. All right, the continuation theory, as I say, we discussed...
Remind me, it's like getting late afternoon, what is the continuation theory?
The continuation theory is that if he doesn't have, if he's walking across his property to get to or go from a recreational activity, that's still a recreational activity. That's supported by the Linville case, which I talked about, and the Sauer case, walking to a spot to find fishing. I think, as Justice Crooks pointed out, I believe one of those cases, the fishing was even going to go on the next day.
But you would agree that all of these cases involve injury that occurred on the property at which the recreation was taking place.
I agree. The issue that we're presenting has not been addressed, and that's probably why we're here today. Exactly. Exactly. But my question is, in terms of recreational activity, if walking to and walking from a recreational activity is recreational activity on the same property, why should it be any different if you're crossing land where there's an easement why should David be treated any differently? I don't have any great problem with that if we're going to uphold the liberal policies behind this. Now, Mr. Wilk has some credible arguments here.
Before you get to those, and I want you to get to those, but I'm bothered by that language of sub 2 as a follow-up to Justice Babich's questions. The phrase I'm focusing on, who enters the owner's property to engage in a recreational activity. What does that mean?
Well, you're entering the property. First of all, depends on which of my two theories we're talking about. But under continuation theory, you're entering that property to go to your boat. That's a recreational activity. Going to the boat is part of the definition of recreational activity.
It would be clearer to me if who enters the owner's property to engage in a recreational activity on that property.
Run that by me again. How would that make it clearer?
Well, then I know for sure that, I mean, that's part of your opposing counsel's argument, that you're coming to the owner's property but not to engage in a recreational activity on that property. So why should the owner be subject to recreational immunity when there's no intent to engage in a recreational activity on that property? That's what I understand the argument to be.
Okay, well...
The intent is to engage in a recreational activity on someone else's property.
And that's a construction that you're proposing, or at least that you've set forth. And just to finish my sentence, I'm not saying you're proposing it, poor choice. My response to that is, and what I was going to say about Mr. Wilk's position, a lot of what I hear, if you're looking for a strict construction or a tight reading of this statute, perhaps those things have some support. But again, it comes back to the requirement that this statute be liberally read in favor of the property owner. This isn't a statute where I think the court's in a position to give a tight reading or a pick at every term. We want to look at the policy here. And I think it's a little difficult for Mr. Urban to make the argument, well, if the legislature wanted to address this kind of a situation, they could have put this language or they could have put that language into the statute. What they did is they gave you a statute that gives a very broad definition of recreational activity, gives a very broad definition of owner, and says let's liberally construe it because we want to encourage people to be able to get to their boats or to the trout farm and do some fishing. And if we're going to do that, we have to apply the statute in favor of David Grosser. If you don't, people are going to think awfully hard about granting any easements in the future, and people that have granted easements in David Grosser's position may well give some thought to, well, maybe I'm better off just not letting anybody on my property. whether I have an easement or not, in spite of that. And, you know, many of these easements, I'm not saying all, but I'm sure some of these easements are like this, a father and son sort of thing, where I doubt David and Paul would have had any problems between each other had they decided simply not to let anyone use this particular easement. And that's certainly the course of action that would seem called for if this court is going to say that, well, Paul, you can have some immunity, but David, you're not entitled to immunity under what seems to me a rather technical reading of the terms here. And that's basically our position with respect to the continuation or the easement, or the continuation theory. I want to just touch briefly on the easement theory, and the question that really bothers me about it is, why would Paul be protected here and David not protected simply because of a nuance of easement law? And how does that fulfill the purpose of the statute to say that, well, David, you're protected, or Paul, you're protected, but David, you're not? You're cutting the heart out of the statute if you do that. And it's just, to me, it's just common sense that if one property owner is entitled to it, all the property owners are entitled to protection of the recreational activity statute. Otherwise, the statute's more or less meaningless. Because, as I've said, if you get in a situation where one guy's protected and one guy isn't, well, the fellow that isn't is going to vote pretty hard to deny recreational use, and that's going to undercut the purpose of the statute. And that's what Mr. Urban's asking you to do here.
Counsel, are you going to get to the social guest?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact, right now.
Okay, then let me preface that, get into it. I know that in your brief you answered that, but your answer was not wholly satisfactory to me, because you essentially relied on Mr. Urban's own testimony, and of course he's not qualified to testify as to whether or not, as a matter of law, he was a social guest. So I would like you to address why, as a matter of law, he was not a social guest.
He wasn't there for a barbecue. He didn't know who David Grosser even was. He bought a boat from Paul, a butch, as he sometimes.
Are you saying that this statute, that language of sub C, that'd be 85-52 sub 6 sub C, that would apply only to sub D, excuse me, that would apply only as to David Grosser? I mean, it seems to me there's some kind of an argument that can be made that he was a social guest of Paul Grosser.
Well, that was never raised at the trial court level and hasn't been raised until this point, at least as I read the briefs. It's a new one on me. The statute says the loophole or exception is in Section 6D. Death or injury occurs on property owned by a private property owner, critical phrase, to a social guest who is expressly and individually invited by the private property owner for the specific occasion during which the death or injury occurs.
And are you saying that private property owner in that statute refers only to David Grosser and not to Paul Grosser?
Well, I don't see that it makes any difference. This is not a social invitation. The guy bought a boat, and he said, you know, you don't have anybody else to put your boat, so you can come down here for the weekend and use it. To me, that's not a social guest. The social guest is somebody that, a social guest is somebody you invite over to go trout fishing, a friend of yours, as an example. A social guest is
somebody who's there to socialize with the property owner.
I'll take that. Exactly. I think that's a very, that's what social gets, what social means to me. And that's the way that I would deal with that particular issue.
Gotcha.
The other issue that they raise is to discuss the commercial transaction claim. Again, there's the exception there indicates that private property owner collects money, goods, or services in payment for the use of the owner's property for the recreational activity during which the death or injury occurs. And that's the critical phrase, for the recreational activity during which the death or injury occurs. I asked Mr. Urban, I said, there's no cash that was exchanged here, like a rental per day or anything like that. No, not for the slip. He bought the boat and made an agreement, yeah, you can stay here till you get a City of Kenosha slip. As I sometimes say, no good deed goes unpunished, I guess.
Help me if you understand this, if you can.
Most of what you're saying, I can say, ooh, that sounds good. And the whole public policy that you talk about in terms of opening up these 40s and opening up these 80s and getting everyone fishing, and you know, that's all good stuff. I have problems, however, when that immunity, when you're dealing with separate properties, and you would grant immunity through every backyard and every parking lot and every gas station area that I cut on my way to the swimming pool. That's the way I understand your argument. Is my understanding correct?
That's a case for another day. That's a line you can draw. I would advocate that that's appropriate. The private property owners are entitled to that under this statute. However, it's not an issue that needs to be decided today.
Well, as soon as you get to two different properties, it seems to me that is, because it seems to me conceptually, as soon as you get out of the one wholly contained property where they're walking on it and going to engage in recreational activity, that's one thing. But as soon as you get out of the wholly contained property and get into separate properties, then it seems to me it's academic whether the separate properties are two separate properties or three separate properties or four separate properties, as long as you're walking on them to get to the fishing hole or get to the swimming pool.
What you're saying, though, we don't have to get to that issue with, assuming these properties are all connected and it's the only way in, which I think is the issue that we're facing right now. If you're saying that there's no recreational immunity for the properties that one needs to cross to get to the recreational source, then you've essentially said, forget this statute. We're not going to have people get the benefit of it, and therefore we're going to deter recreational use.
What I'm interested in is what you're saying. And that is, because I'm trying to, and that is, it seems to me, the logical, either you are saying it, or the logical extension of what you're saying is there's immunity all along the way to the swimming pool.
Well, and again, your example, we've still got all these trespasser questions that I'm sorry I keep coming back to, but in your examples, it just cries out that that's a real issue to get over. But if these people are opening their property to let you walk, you know, three or four houses down, why shouldn't, if I'm, for example, let's take the fireworks example. Suppose the fireworks are on Lake Michigan, to use a Milwaukee example, and people cut through three or four yards, and everybody says, go on and cut through the yards. That's fine. You can go down there and watch the fireworks. And let's say fireworks is a recreational activity, and somebody gets hurt doing that. Is it so horrifying a principle that those people would enjoy immunity under the statute? Out of the goodness of their heart, they've allowed this particular use to go on, they're not claiming trespasser status. Is that a bad public policy? I don't care whether it's good or bad. Isn't that what the legislature was talking about when they enacted this particular statute?
Were they talking about people opening up their 60 feet behind the house and 40 feet on the side of the house?
Well, in the Siebert case, the holding was that the key is what the activity is that the person's doing, not where the property is located. And I think that comes back to answer your question with the precedent from that particular case. But I think the bottom line of the statute is it's to be liberally construed in favor of property owners to encourage allowing recreational activity. If you go with Mr. Urban's theory here, you're cutting the heart out of the statute. Whenever you have enclosed property or property to which there's a problem in getting access, there isn't going to be any recreational activity. Or perhaps that's an extreme statement, but there's going to be a reduction in availability of that type of property, which is contrary to the intent of the statute. I have some comments, just very quickly, since I see my time is just about up, on some of the other issues that we raised in our brief. Number one, we believe that the record here would justify a finding as a matter of law that the negligence of Mr. Urban exceeds that of Mr. Grosser. We do not believe a properly instructed jury could find that the negligence, if there be any of Grosser, would exceed that of Mr. Urban. The facts in this case have been set forth in the briefs. I'll try to just discuss a couple of them very quickly. Urban had been 20 to 30 times across this yard. There is a chain laying out in the middle of the yard at a minimum. There's question in the record, and so I won't rely on the fact as to how many times the dog had been out. Mr. Urban comes up a back set of stairs, sees the dog,
doesn't bother to check if there's a chain attached or not, doesn't bother to do anything but turn and run, and as he said, quote, fly like a cartoon character, close quote, off a 10-foot retaining wall that he knew was there. He apparently did not elect to see if the dog was chained. He did not elect to go back down the stairs from which he had just come. I see my time is up, and I will spare you the remainder of my comments regarding this. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay. Mr. Wilk.
Yes. There are a number of issues that I'd like to talk about very briefly. The first is that there has been some implication that the plaintiff appellants here are attempting to endorse some kind of strict construction rule regarding this statute. The reality is that we're asking that the statutory language be given its plain and ordinary effect. There's nothing in the statute that says we're going to permit immunity for a person who allows their property to be used for recreational activity upon that property and everyone who crosses property to get to that property. The legislature wanted that to be the law. They could have made it the law. What the statute says and what all the cases have held specifically is, quote, no owner is liable for any injury to a person engaging in a recreational activity on the owner's property. Therefore, the analysis here has to be, is it a recreational activity that Donald Urban is engaging in when he is on David Grasser's property? Is his activity substantially similar to the enumerated list? I don't believe it is. All he is doing is transiting. That's the extent of it. The courts have held that walking without more is not a recreational activity.
But isn't the more here the fact that at the end of this rainbow is a pot of gold?
I don't think so, because you only look at what happens on the person's property. What activities are they engaged in upon that property? That is why it's important also to note that all the cases that have addressed similar issues in Wisconsin have limited that inquiry to that which occurs on the property. They don't look at what happened beyond. They don't look at what is going to happen. The issue is, what is this person doing on this property? What activities are they engaged in this property? We've spoken a little bit about the Sauer and Linville cases. The Sauer case is the case in which a gentleman drowned while walking fishing. And the argument has been, well, if walking to go fishing is recreational, then so is walking to go boating. Factually, Sauer is distinguishable because the instance in Sauer is that this gentleman enters the river, is fishing, proceeds to decide to wade while still in the water, while still fishing, down to another spot. In the course of wading down to that spot, he drowns, he is injured. Clearly, that is a different situation than walking to your boat to go boating, imagining that you're crossing other people's property. Sauer just is not on point in that regard.
Does Paul Grasser have immunity under this statute?
I'm glad that you raised that, because I think that there are issues regarding Paul Grasser's immunity. Clearly, if the defense is correct and you piggyback what happens on this distinct property to what happens on this other person's property, you have to also look at what happens on Paul Grasser's land. Mr. Simpson has raised a number of the issues that I believe give rise to a question of whether or not Paul Grasser is immune. First of all, it's a commercial transaction. Mr. Urban is there to buy a boat. I don't think this statute was designed to protect people for engaging.
Not at the moment he was injured. He had already bought the boat, right?
My position, the plaintiff's position, is that this is all kind of a continuum of that commercial activity. The reason being is part and parcel with the purchase of the boat is the use and access of the docks.
A new variation of the continuation theory, it sounds.
A modification of the continuation theory. Secondly, and probably more importantly, there is the issue of the social guest. Mr. Urban, if he isn't engaged in a commercial activity, and he isn't trespassing, got to this property somehow. The way he gets to this property is Paul Grasser says, come on down, buy the boat, stay on the boat. Tomorrow we're going to help you back in and out. We're going to practice, as factually happened here. Paul Grasser assists him in backing this boat in and out. As he's traveling to his car, he is injured. I would argue that that is the social guest exception. That is an individual who is specifically invited for the occasion in which the injury occurs. There's nothing in the law that says it has to be 2 hours, or 3 hours, or 5 hours. This all occurred within approximately 24 to 48 hours. There's nothing in the law that says that the social guest can't be the person who is invited for that extent of time. It would seem to me that if I invited a friend over for the weekend, they would be a social guest for that weekend, regardless of whether or not, regardless of the time within which they were a social guest.
That sort of equates any old permission with being a social guest, doesn't it?
May I continue?
Yes, go ahead.
The social guest, the definition of social guest under Black's Law Dictionary is a person who goes onto the property of another for companionship, diversion, or the hospitality of another. I think that this could come in under the diversion. I think that a person who is specifically invited, remember that the issue here is regarding recreational immunity. A person who is specifically invited to engage in a recreational activity upon their property and they are injured, there is no immunity for the owner in that case. That's what happened here. Paul Grasser invited...
Isn't it fair to say that he was there for purposes of access?
In order
to engage in the water sports?
I think that if you say that he is there for access, then you get back to the easement argument, which is the reason that David Grasser doesn't have immunity. No recreational activity occurs on David Grasser's property. The only arguments have been whether or not Paul Grasser, let me back up. In order for David Grasser to enjoy immunity, there has to have been immunity for the activities that occur on Paul Grasser's property. If Donald Urban is not engaged in immunity on Paul Grasser, it doesn't follow that you can piggyback that immunity onto David Grasser. It follows, in fact, that if there's no immunity on one, there's no immunity on the other.
And you think there'd be no immunity on Paul because of a D? That's the 16. Social guest.
Yes,
16. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilk.
Thank you,
Mrs. Sampson. That concludes our oral arguments for Wednesday. The court is in recess until Friday morning at 9:45.